You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade, and nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you, as always, for being part of our daily lives and making us part of your daily routine. We are the Rain and Jays, John Corrales from RedsArmy.com and Boston.com. Sam Jam Packard, high above the court at the Boston Garden after a 120-106 win over the Milwaukee Bucks, a shockingly thorough demolition of the Milwaukee Bucks. Lots to talk about. Big performances here from Jaylen Brown, from Terry Rozier, Horford, Morris.
Sugar Shane Larkin.
Big production off the bench. I mean, just one of those all-around games. So let's just dive right into it and start with holy shit. Jaylen Brown, what a game out of him. 30 points, 5 rebounds, 12 of 22 shooting, 5 of 12 from 3. Just, I mean, there was a stretch there in the second quarter that it was just the Jaylen show. He was awesome in the first. He was awesome in the second. He was shaking people. He was dropping hezzies. He was dropping shimmies. He was doing everything tonight.
He was in the zone, and he was in attack mode, which is always, if you've been listening to this podcast for the entire year, Jaylen Brown in attack mode, looking to get to the basket, is when he's at his best. And I thought he acknowledged that no one on this the Bucks roster could really guard him, especially not Chris Middleton. And he was attacking. And then from three, he was just letting it fly. I mean, he attempted 12 threes from tonight, which I'm not used to Jaylen Brown doing, but he made them when it counted. And he even threw in a little bank three at the end. He becomes the youngest Celtics player to score 30 points in a playoff game, which is just wild. And on top of all that, I thought he played stellar defense on Chris Middleton. Chris Middleton did not attempt a shot in the first quarter. And that was mostly because Jaylen Brown was in his hip pocket for the entire first quarter. And I thought he did a great job continuing. Now, Chris Middleton, because he is a, I will admit, good basketball player, eventually found a way to score some points, but I thought Jaylen had terrific defense on him the entire evening. And so it was just in an evening where Jason Tatum was really struggling from the field and Horford wasn't attempting a lot of shots early, Jaylen Brown carried the offense, and it was just a dynamic performance. He was fantastic for the entire evening. And before the series, I put out a Twitter poll about who's better, Chris Middleton or Jaylen Brown. It was somewhat facetious, but somewhat, I think Jaylen's just an all-around better player, and if he's going to put up 30 points in a playoff game, I think that poll is heavily leaning towards Jaylen Brown. And it was awesome because after Middleton went off in game one, I got a few Bucks fans. The few Bucks fans that are on Twitter were retweeting that, trying to make me look like an idiot, but all I had to do was wait 2 days, and now it's the Jaylen Brown show. Downtown Jaylen Brown, Juice, whatever you want to call him, he showed up tonight.
I really have to be better about using the Juice nickname because it's so good. For some reason, I can't get it in my head to call him Juice when he's going off like that. But, yeah, the first quarter, he was spectacular. 5 of 8, 2 of 4 from three, 12 points in the first quarter. In the second quarter, he continued hitting a couple of shots, but he was just carried the team. Like you said, in the third, in the second half, 14 points on 5 of 10 shooting, 3 of 7 from 3. Just, I mean, I don't know. We could sit here and gush about Jaylen Brown all night. I kind of half-jokingly sent out a tweet
saying, why would anybody want to trade for Kawhi Leonard in Boston? We've already got the next one right here. He's wearing number 7.
And he likes to play basketball, which is a step above Kawhi Leonard right now.
But like, I'm only half joking. Like, Kawhi is obviously a superstar whenever he does play, but Jaylen Brown is a fantastic two-way player, and if he continues progressing at this clip, he's kind of on a similar path. Look, people forget that Kawhi Leonard didn't exactly come out right away and just be awesome right away. He had to blossom into
– He had to learn how to shoot.
Yeah. So it's actually kind of funny that they both had that similar kind of path, that not great shooters learning how to shoot and all of that stuff. Great defenders, big muscular wings, explosive. Now, I'm not going to sit there and say Jaylen Brown is actually going to be the next Kawhi Leonard, but he's playing really, really well on both ends of the floor, and he has at least a better than zero chance of that possibly happening. So, and a better chance than most other guys in the league of that possibly happening.
Because it's only his second year, which is insane. This is only his second playoffs, and it felt like he took a little bit of a step last year. And this year, when clearly the Celtics are going to need someone to step up and score the offense and be a volume scorer, he took it upon himself to do that. And I think it's great, and it kind of, I think it's, I don't want to overvalue Brad Stevens, but it feels like any player on this team could step up and have a huge game. And tonight it was Jaylen Brown, but I wouldn't be shocked in game 3 if it's Jason Tatum or back to Terry Rozier or back to Mook Morris. It's just that's kind of the way the Celtics offense functions. And tonight it was Jaylen Brown's number. It's just the Bucks didn't really have an answer whatsoever. They couldn't really score when they had their bigs in the game. And then when they put Giannis at the 5, they were terrible, just absolutely atrocious on defense. And the Bucks are just dumb, man. The Bucks just play terrible basketball. They have designed plays to get them long twos. They shot 60% from the field tonight and lost the game. But if then you look at the number of shots they took, it's like the Celtics had 20 more shots. The Bucks just don't attempt threes. It's like, where have they been for the past like 10, 15 years of Morey ball and like the advanced analytics and understanding that threes are a valuable shot? It's just, it doesn't make sense, their roster. And so after an initial game 1 scare, and I'm riding high off of this game, off this win, really taking my takes to the extreme. But I think, like, me and Jay in the preview podcast talked about just like the Bucks aren't very good. And I think we saw that tonight. They're just, they, other than Giannis, who was quite good, but even had not a great game for him, other than Giannis and occasionally Chris Middleton, they just don't have a lot of players, and they compound that just lack of talent with just stupidity, just not playing basketball in a way that's conducive to winning. And it's great for Celtics fans, because I think they're going to wrap this up in 5. But I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah, no, there's the irrational exuberance. Well, it's not very irrational. Look, you're right. The Bucks had basically 2 stretches. The beginning of the second quarter, obviously, because every team, like you, me, you, Jay, and a couple other people who listen to the podcast could go play the Celtics, lose by 1,000, but outscore them in the first 5 minutes of the second quarter. That's just how bad
they tend to be. It's because the Celtics are not allowed to score when they put their second unit in. It's just the rules.
It's wild. It's crazy. But so the Bucks got it, tied it, and then the Celtics immediately responded with a run and pushed it back up to double digits. And then in the fourth quarter, it got just a tiny bit hairy when, like, everybody was kind of like in celebration mode. Mook was just picking fights and, you know, getting under Middleton's skin and just going out there and mooking all over the floor. And everybody was just kind of a little too happy too soon, my present company included. So,
oh, yeah. I tweeted out basically that the game was over with 9 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter, and I felt a little bit dumb when the Bucks cut it to, I think it was 11, but
they got it down to 10. Yeah, ooh. They got it down to 10 a couple of times, and then the Celtics just whipped off a run to get it back up to, like, I think it was 18 or so. But it was, you know, it was like Rozier, Horford, Jaylen, just boom, boom, boom. And so, but aside from those 2 stretches where they tied it and got it close again, the Bucks looked generally lost. It was Giannis kind of willing the team to be competitive. Giannis had another game where it felt like the Celtics sort of controlled him. Like, there were stretches where he was obviously, like, super, super good. But
he opened the game 4-for-4, but then didn't attempt a shot for the final 9 minutes of the first quarter. I think the Celtics did a great job of just throwing size at him. And so even though he finished with 13 points and a pretty efficient 13 for 17, it's not like he had to pass the ball often. Wow, pretty good stat line, but 9 rebounds and 8 assists.
The stat line looks great. And you sit there and say, oh, Giannis did everything that he could. He did do everything that he could. But it was another game of Giannis putting up kind of like monster-ish numbers, but still not feeling like he controlled the game for more than a couple of minutes at a time. Like you said, early in the first, there were a couple of little stretches where he had a couple of drives. There's only so much you can do to contain Giannis. The numbers look great, but I really do think that at no point did I feel like Giannis was really, really taking over beyond the first part of the first quarter.
Yeah, the first part of the first quarter, and he was pretty good in that shittier run in the first or start of the second quarter that you mentioned, but that's just because the Celtics weren't making shots and allowed the Bucks to get out in transition. And so if you look at just at the Bucks statistics, you know, they shot 60%. Middleton had a pretty efficient game, 10 for 14. I mean, Bledsoe was trash, but we can get to that later. Brogdon was like pretty good. But then you look at the turnovers, you look at the offensive rebounds that the Bucks gave up. They just don't do any of the little things you need to do in the playoffs to win basketball games. So you're like, their entire offense is designed around Giannis like shooting around the paint, or Chris Middleton or Brogdon doing these like pull up long twos. And it's not very efficient basketball. So when you play like a dreadfully slow pace, they only ended up taking 77 shots. The Celtics took 90 shots. When you play a slow pace, when you turn the ball over, and when you give the Celtics second chance opportunities, your 60% doesn't matter. And if you're not taking threes, it's absurd. It's just like they only took 17 threes tonight. They're actually shot a decent percentage, 7 for 17, but it just feels like, how are they going to keep up and continue to score just by like overloading the paint? It just does it like at no point does the math add up for them. It feels like the Bucks have to play a perfect game in order to beat the Celtics. And tonight, on top of the Bucks just not having a great game plan and all that, I just didn't think they played very hard. It felt like for as long stretches, the Celtics were just playing just more intense on the defensive end. The Bucks were just kind of letting the Celtics impose their will. And then towards the end, it just the Bucks got frustrated. And that's when you saw the Celtics really kind of elevate the lead to something around 19. It felt like the Bucks know that they're dumb. And it's kind of like that, like in Forrest Gump, when he asks if his son is like him. It's a very touching moment when the dumb guy becomes self-aware. But it's great for Celtics fans.
It's true. Oh man,
I don't know where I pulled that one from, but it's
that was a good one. That was a good. But yeah, look, there were a couple stretches I wrote down in my notes. Parker looks lost, and there were a lot of stretches there where Jabari Parker just looked terrible, looked lost, looked disengaged, wasn't playing at full speed, it seemed like sometimes. He only played 10 minutes. And again, I go back to the comments that have been made on Bucks podcasts that there was a question of how playable is Jabari Parker in this. And the Bucks need Jabari Parker. They need somebody to do something other than Chris Middleton and Giannis Antetokounmpo, who combined for 55 points. But when you're matched, when you've got Middleton and Giannis going for 55, and they're essentially matched by Jaylen Brown and Terry Rozier, who went for 53, then they're screwed because they've got nothing else. They got nothing from anybody else. You got 12 from John Henson, which how the hell do you get 12 out of Henson?
He had a lot of end of the game buckets when the Celtics were kind of small. But.
Right. Bledsoe had another terrible game, 12 points, a couple of threes, but then 10 for Brogdon, who I don't know why Brogdon only played 18 minutes. So I will say this, Prunty is not exactly moving to the forefront of the Bucks coaching wish list. I don't think he's hanging around for much longer in Milwaukee.
You mean his move to go to Shabazz Muhammad as the savior? It wasn't like the brilliant coaching move that was going to save the series for them? It's just Shabazz had a decent like game, I guess. He scored 11 points, but it just they're just not very a deep team. If you look at their bench, other than Brogdon, who do you want to bring in and actually or like you're going to think is going to have an impact on this game? We got a good 6 minutes of Tyler Zeller. He was minus 10 in that time frame. Like, I just don't know what the answer is for the Bucks because clearly everyone thought, look how dynamic of scorers they were when Giannis goes to the five. But there's a reason why Giannis at the five lineups were terrible the entire year is because the Bucks just can't play defense that way. Giannis is not a rim protector for as tall as and as athletic he is. He's not someone who's just going to like. It felt like when he was at the five, Rozier, Jaylen Brown, and Tatum just were driving at will. And so I don't know what the fix is for the Bucks. It's either you try to get more shooting on the court and you go small and you try to like have an advantage scoring that way, or you just try to play like really sturdy defense the entire time and then that puts another big on the court and you're just limiting Giannis right there. There's no clear solution or clear path forward for a Bucks victory at this point. And I can't blame Waylon Smithers that often. He's just been dealt like a bad hand. Like there's not much he can do. Mr. Burns has released the hounds on him and he's just trying to run out his season.
You are on fire today. Are on fire.
I should do this from the ninth floor more often.
It's that
I'm surrounded by banners right now. It's surrounded
that altitude.
By winning.
Yeah, you got the banners influencing you, maybe a little thinner air up there. It's really working for you. And I will just echo the things that people have been saying. It's true. The Bucks should be better. Bledsoe should be better. Parker should be better. Brogdon should play more.
I'm shocked he has 19 minutes right now. I'm sorry to interrupt, but like you would think that starting Brogdon over Bledsoe would be the solution because Brogdon feels like he knows what he's doing and Bledsoe does not.
Yeah, I would flip their – I would have Brogdon playing 34 minutes and Bledsoe playing 18. And just – that's just how it's going to be. Look, and maybe we'll see something in Game 3. Maybe being home will be enough for them in Game 3. I don't know. But it's – they should be better than this. We will get into, by the way, this is like one of two podcasts for me today. After we wrap this up, and after the Pelicans game, I'm going to be hopping on the Locked On NBA podcast with Locked On Pelicans host Jake Madison. So we'll be going more in depth. We'll get another outsider's perspective on this game and talk more about things from the Bucks' perspective at that point. Obviously, I'll be talking a lot more about the Celtics and recapping the other games. Toronto wasting the Wizards. That's going to be a fun one to talk about. And whatever happens with Pelicans and Blazers. So make sure you check out the Locked On NBA podcast and subscribe to that. Search for Locked On NBA wherever you found Locked On Celtics. It's funny. We got playoff Yabu, which was
in the first quarter. First quarter playoff Yabu.
And he did okay. Like, he held his own. He got three rebounds. He had an assist, a couple of steals. I mean, he didn't play after that, really, but he, for a short burst, he was serviceable, which is more than the Bucks can say about some of their guys. But
he was playing with some crazy energy. Yabu, it's like a bull in a china shop, and he had that one play where I think it was a missed three where he was just hustling for the rebound and falling out of bounds, found Rozier for an open three, and it was just – it was an amazing spark. Yeah, and oh my God, if he hit that three in the first quarter, this place would have exploded.
The whole place would have come down.
It would have been. And the fact that we can get – I didn't even know playoff Yabu was a thing. I didn't know Dabu Sele could be a thing. But that's what Brad – it's just – Brad's just a nice guy. He doesn't – he gives us a nice surprise with a win like this.
I'm just going to basically just start giving people their due – let's just – I want to kind of say this, too. The Celtics clearly handled the Bucks with Jason Tatum scoring 4 points. After being such a key to game one, he struggled a bit. And I think a lot of it had to do, like, he was just missing a lot of shots. I don't think he got a lot of the foul calls that he should have gotten. But only scoring 4 points for the Celtics to get a win with Tatum only scoring 4 points is amazing. Al Horford, 16 points on 7 of 11 shooting, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals. More just stellar defense on Giannis whenever he had the opportunity. I love that they went back. They went back to the Horford in the post, like, immediately, and then they kind of got away from it.
I think Giannis did a really good job of just kind of playing straight up and playing defense against Horford and not reaching. And so I think there was a reason they went away from it. But the thing that makes Al Horford so good is that he, instead of going to the post, he took about 5 feet step back and was just knocking down, like, those elbow jumpers with ease. And so he had a few difficult post moves that he knocked down, but he was just a very solid performer tonight. And I was like, I'm not surprised that going back to the Horford in the post didn't work, because I was so shocked that it worked in the first place. And I think Giannis is just, like, a little bit more disciplined tonight in his defense of Horford. And so once I saw that happen, I thought, oh man, maybe the Celtics will struggle to score points. But I think they just did a really good job of attacking. And I think a lot of it started with just playing a great defense and getting out in transition. And then the offensive rebounds I thought were huge.
Yeah, the Bucks are not a good rebounding team. And the Celtics have been pretty good rebounding, and they really are taking advantage of that. Let's see here. Celtics Stats, which is a great – Celtics underscore Stats, a great Twitter account, just tweeted this out. Boston's starting backcourt of Terry Rozier and Jaylen Brown has combined to outscore Milwaukee's starting backcourt 96-25 through two games in this series.
Wow.
Let's just – soak that in for a second. Milwaukee's starting backcourt of Tony Snell and Eric Bledsoe has been completely and utterly decimated by Terry Rozier and Jaylen Brown, outscored by 41 points. Holy shit.
Does Tony Snell exist? I don't think he's done a thing in this entire
nothing
series.
Nothing. He's been nothing. Non-factor. Completely. Like, you forget that he's on the team.
I mean, they need someone else to step up. The Bucks need someone else to step up. But I just think that a good opportunity to talk about Terry Rozier. I thought he had a great game and attacking the rim. I thought that was very key. Even the times when he didn't make it, they drew a lot of attention from the offense and allowed Baines to get some good putbacks.
Huge.
Baines had a solid performance tonight and actually ended up with 4 offensive rebounds, 6 points. I just thought he was more active on the offensive glass. But getting back to Tito, he made his 3 of 5 from 3 and then showed off that a little bit of the floaters, just attacking the basket, especially when Giannis was at the 5. I just thought he was brilliant. And then the amazing stat is that he's played over 70 minutes in this I think it may be 75 minutes at this point in these two games and hasn't yet to turn the ball over. And that was the key for this entire series, is we talked about how the Bucks are this really great team at forcing turnovers and getting points off turnovers, especially because just Giannis in transition is amazing. And when your primary ball handler, you're pretty much your only ball handler, has 0 turnovers, that's great. I think that's, like, amazing performance from Terry Rozier. The 3-point shooting is there, and being steady with the basketball is there. After that, like, the scoring in the paint is just kind of gravy. But I think he's been very good in these two games.
I want to incorporate a tweet from @BallinOpinions. Can we talk about Tito not having any turnovers to start the playoffs? That might be. It's hard to pick one key to this whole thing, but that might be at the top of the list. If we're really being honest, you can say maybe Horford's aggressiveness has been at or near the top of why the Celtics have started this series by winning the first two games. Terry Rozier not turning the ball over is, I think it's more important than that, just because for what you said, and I remember writing it Sunday on Red's Army, the first key to this whole thing was about the turnovers, the Celtics turnovers. If By protecting the ball, they are preventing Milwaukee's best chance at scoring and the best chance that Milwaukee has of getting this thing to go out of control. And we saw it in the second quarter of game one where the Celtics turned the ball over. And any live ball turnover is basically, you might as well just alley-oop it to Giannis yourself, because it's just not, it's not going to end well for you. So you protect the ball, and even if you miss and you just fall back, you prevent those transition opportunities. Terry Rozier not turning the ball over has been, I mean, that really is where it all begins. So we got to give plenty of love to Tito, because that's, I don't think, well, obviously nobody expected him to have no turnovers, but to be this collected at this point with this being his playoff debut, especially without some of the guys that, you know, that are healthy, that are hurt, I should say. I don't know. I'm struggling to find the words for exactly how to describe what Rozier has been doing. It's just really, really impressive. He has, I wrote before the series started on Saturday, welcome to Terry Rozier's moment, and he is just living up to it and then some.
Oh yeah, and he's earning a lot of money for himself in the future, because he's definitely proven that he's I think he's clearly a starting point guard in this league. When you can score 20 points easily and just play very good defense on Eric Bledsoe for the entire night, I think he's doing quite well. And I think another person we have to give a lot of credit for having zero turnovers is Shane Larkin. After having a terrible performance in the second quarter of game one, where he just turned the ball over, it felt like four times, he was great tonight. Especially in, he was in that stretch in the second quarter where they were bad, but I don't think that's entirely on Shane Larkin. That's just kind of the Celtics' second unit. But Larkin had 11 points tonight, was attacking the rim, had some nifty moves, knocked down a three, knocked down that crazy three at the end of the third quarter, and again played stellar defense for the entire night. And Chris Forsberg, actually, of ESPN Boston, had a pretty interesting article recently about just Danny Ainge's every single move that Danny Ainge did this offseason went right. And if you think back to Shane Larkin when he was first signed, the Celtics already had 15 players on the roster. There was about a 48-hour window for him to be signed, and Danny Ainge went out and did it knowing that he had to cut someone. And it was just, it's a crazy that worked out, but he's really been a very important player for the Celtics. And that's the celebration where he did like a full jump 360 and felt like he jumped 48 inches to mash with Yabu after that three was fantastic. It reminded me of
off the floor.
He can jump. It was wild. He should be in a Celtics dunk contest of some sort, but it was really cool. And the best part about that is that that possession came with 3.5 seconds left, and Brad called a timeout to basically, I guess, design that play where he's just going to go one-on-one against Jason Terry. But Brad called a timeout when Tatum was wide open for a breakaway. And Brad just wanted to steal some of that ATO shine for himself, because it made no sense. They had a layup, but Brad, being the all-knowing, all-seeing leader, the third eye of the Celtics, 3 points are better than two. So
I will say him. Before the, because that was off the free throw. So I think, was it off a free throw?
It was off some sort of missed basket where the Celtics grabbed a rebound, and I thought Tatum was the only person on the opposite side of the court.
So before Milwaukee even took that shot, they were walking the ball up the floor, and I saw Brad Stevens talking to the ref and saying, if we get the ball back, he was clearly telling him, if we get the ball back, I want a timeout. So he had that timeout basically called before the Celtics even got possession. So he wasn't even looking to see who was open or whatever. As soon as the Celtics got a fingertip on the ball, he was calling timeout. He knew he wanted it. And so breakaway be damned. It's not like he saw it and said, no. He was calling for that timeout as Milwaukee was walking the ball up the floor. So he wanted to maximize the amount of time that he had. You must have known that Milwaukee was going to do something stupid and give him time to do something. So it was just, you know, Brad Stevens. I'm glad to hear that other coaches around the league may question why he's so high in the Mount Rushmore on other podcasts, but well, I'm happy to have Brad Stevens as my coach, and I think that he's a very smart coach and maybe one of the smartest coaches in the NBA. So,
hey, man, you don't have to convince me. I'm ready to get a Kaizen tattoo right now.
I want to just let everybody know again, you should be listening to Lockdown Bucks. I can't wait to hear what they have to say after this one. There was a little bit, I felt like after game one, they felt good about where the Bucks were and the missed opportunities, and they still felt good. They were talking about Bucks in six. I have a feeling that they're going to have a little bit of a different tone. So whether you want to gloat, whether you want to, you know, just listen to the opponents kind of drone on about being upset about this or lament the impending end of a very disappointing season for them, go ahead and check out Lockdown Bucks for whatever reason. But they do a very, very good job, and you'll hear some very good analysis and things that maybe the Bucks can do at home to change their fortunes potentially. So series is definitely not over, but it's looking good, and they're going to have some great insight into what might change. So check out Lockdown Bucks. Let's give Mook the appropriate amount of time.
Oh, my.
Can we please? Because he had a couple of moments. He just going at Giannis, shook him. He had one, a step back three where he stared him down. I mean, that was ridiculous.
His step back three is something I just was not aware he could do, and it feels like something he developed this season, because we got so many good jokes off about Mook and long twos and ISO Mook and long twos, but it feels like he's really nailed that ability to just, it's Harden-esque in his ability to step behind the line and knock down the three, and so he deserves all the credit in the world. And I thought he played some pretty solid defense on Giannis, and he's just the guy that intensity. I'm all for him getting in minor scraps with Chris Middleton. In the fourth quarter, when the Celtics were kind of faltering and the Bucks got it close, ISO Mook from the mid-range is really what kind of capped that off. He had, I think, about 4 points down in that stretch. He's just been phenomenal. I mean, the playoff basketball is about making kind of contested shots, and Mook is all about making contested shots. That is his brand, so he deserves a lot of credit. He was, once again, just phenomenal tonight.
I'm slightly distracted here. We're going to get to the Eric Bledsoe comments after the game in a second, because Jesus Christ. But let's finish up the Mook conversation here. So I apologize if I step on what you just said. I didn't actually listen to what you just said because I'm so aghast.
Oh, yeah, let's go to this. This is spicy.
So I just want to make a point just to wrap up the Mook thing. Boston bench scoring through two games this series, 68-48. So the bench contributions have been awesome, and I think that Marcus Morris is just playing out of his mind. Shout out to Greg Monroe and blah blah blah. Okay, let's get to these comments, because holy shit, Eric Bledsoe actually said the following, and this is from Ben Rohrbach, who tweeted this out. The reporter asks, Terry Rozier hasn't committed a turnover in 78 minutes. How personally do you take that matchup? And Bledsoe says, who? And the reporter says, Terry Rozier. And Bledsoe says, I don't know who the fuck that is. Really? Really, Eric Bledsoe? Really? You don't know who the fuck Terry Rozier is? The guy who just torched you twice. Don't give me that bullshit, Eric Bledsoe. You are not in a position to drop a who on Terry Rozier. If anybody is dropping a who, it's Terry Rozier on you, Eric Bledsoe. Do something. Do something in this series before you say who to Terry goddamn Tito Three Sticks Rozier.
Although it might make some sense if Eric Bledsoe actually didn't know who Terry Rozier was. Because that might explain why he's just not playing whatsoever and clearly hasn't read a scouting report. And might explain his poor performance the entire series. And this might just be payback, because after game one, Terry Rozier called Eric Bledsoe Drew Bledsoe. And so maybe that was just a huge sign of disrespect. But that is an absurd absurd comment for Eric Bledsoe, the king of clutch sports, to make. I don't understand if you're a reporter how you don't laugh in his face. It's absurd.
I would have died. I wish the follow-up would have been, oh, he's the guy who put you on skates to hit that three at the end of regulation.
He's that the guy who's going to be making a whole lot more money than you during his next contract.
Yeah. He's the guy that's part of the backcourt that's outscoring you by 41 points in this series so far.
You know Terry's going to tweet something awesome. You know he's going to have a great clapback.
It's going to be so good. It's going to be so good. I mean, just please, please, somebody get this. People have already tagged him on Twitter. I can't believe, like, there's petty, there's fun, there's like, oh, this league is awesome. That is dumb. That is dumb. I cannot believe that he has the balls to drop that comment. That is so dumb.
Well, maybe he knows about Scary Terry or Tito Three Sticks. The man has many nicknames, and rarely do we call him Terry Rozier.
I should apologize. Maybe he's a listener of the podcast, and he just knows him as Tito.
Yeah, that could be very true. That could be. That makes a whole lot more sense than him just being blissfully unaware of the guy who just dominated him for 78 minutes.
Right, right. Twitter is lighting up over this, too, because people are tweeting it and just like everybody's just like aghast at Eric Bledsoe, of all people, saying this. All right, let's just move on. Let's get to a couple of the old tweets, huh?
Yeah, why not?
At Rifesy, the bank three to get to 30, definitely Jalen's night. That was sweet. The bank shot three, and him laughing afterwards, awesome. Fun
there's
moment.
Nothing you, there's nothing you can do but laugh when you make a bank three, because it's not how you designed it. It probably shouldn't count.
I don't know. This is going to step on your junk drawer, but at Ball and Opinions, Tito with a technical because he got caught responding to a Bucks player. Not just a Bucks player, a Bucks player who got a DNP, Thon Maker.
No, Thon got 1 minute at the end of the game. Don't you dare. Sorry. He got one minute, one tech, but I really want to know what Terry said. Hopefully our crack reporter, Jay King, is downstairs asking him those types of questions right now, because that was shocking, and I'm all here for it. I'm all for Terry nailing a three and then getting in a fight with someone on the Bucks bench, especially after Eric Bledsoe is coming with this nonsense. I didn't hate the Bucks. I had no reason to dislike the Bucks. I felt bad for the Bucks, but now I have scorn. Now I want to crush them.
Yes. Well, this is the playoffs, baby. This is what happens. I like the Bucks. To me, they've been a generally benign team, which I know is probably a very backhanded, asshole-ish thing to say about them, because it just shows a disdain, or at least that's my version of who. But I like the Bucks.
I don't even know who the fuck the Bucks are.
Yeah, where do they play? They're a team? No. I love, obviously, Giannis Antetokounmpo. Obviously, he's one of my favorite non-Celtics out there.
Yasu. To all the yeah.
So there's nothing to dislike about Milwaukee, but you know, Eric Bledsoe saying those things and guys chirping from the bench when they haven't done a damn thing, getting texts, sure, whatever. Let's see here. At Scropeberg, this will go down as the moment Mook became a Boston legend. And that goes to when he was scrapping, I believe, with Middleton and just had to be separated, and as he was walking away, he was just kind of like waving the crowd on. The crowd just went nuts. Between game one and game two, I think Morris has really, really, really stepped up and earned his like Boston legend status, that cult Boston legend status. But I will also say that really nice move by Brad Stevens, good move by taking him out at that particular point, because I think Morris was on his way to doing something stupid.
Oh,
so.
Man. Brad and Mook in a long road trip together, or just like I need them, those two personalities, to spend more time together. We saw the electric Super Bowl.
That was fun.
Press conference. I just think those two guys, it's just perfect. They're made for each other. They're the perfect odd couple. And so I agree. Mook, Boston has fallen in love with Mook, and deservedly so, because he's played shooting the lights out the past 2 months, and there's nothing Boston like more than guys who show up in the playoffs, and for two games, he's definitely done that.
Let me rip through a few of these real quick just so I can give the shout-outs to, let's see, at Justin GMU Hokey, is Tony Snell the worst shooting guard in the NBA right now? Yes, we've already discussed that. RG3 Sticks, Sugar Shane finishing the quarter like a baller, blazing fast downhill, uncontested layup followed by a three. That was awesome. At Micah underscore Angelo, Micah Malloy, Brad Stevens, ATO, Sugar Shane's three to end the quarter. Cash money. Awesome. Let's see. What else do we got here? People just – I love the people who are just sending us, like, volume tweets, just like 10. I can't read all of them.
The people are jacked up. I love it.
Yeah. Let's see. At underscore Costello, given the way double nickel Moose has played against the Celtics in the past and given the way Bledsoe has played us thus far, this series could be very different if Bledsoe didn't crack the Sads in Phoenix.
That's an Aussie listener, and I want to really believe that crack the Sads is an Aussie term, so I'm just going to agree.
Yeah, so I guess that
means
that...
Good day, mate!
Yeah.
That was terrible. I'm sorry.
Sorry. So horrible.
Deli's down there somewhere, and he's just... shivering because of the terrible things I put out into the ether.
But I guess the point is there that if Bledsoe wasn't just if he didn't crack the Sads in Phoenix, he wouldn't have wanted out, and Moose wouldn't have been traded to Phoenix and then summarily bought out and then signed by the Celtics. So yeah, funny things the way that all works out. He could have had Moose working against the Celtics in this series. Which would have been a problem, I think.
Yeah, no, he normally kills the Celtics.
So that's, I think that's it. We've got, we got a lot of these things. Betsy May Patel, the guys, the counting appears to be working. Let's keep it going. People started counting when.
Oh, yeah. Giannis was shook, man. When they got the best counting going, he missed the first one and then airballed the second. And it really felt like they were totally in his head. And he didn't make another one until he, like, it felt like he was really trying to get the ball off at around 10. And he didn't make one until he held the ball to, like, 13. And so, for a moment there, it was awesome. I'm all for the crowd manipulating or, like, getting into a player's head, a visiting player's head. I thought that was really cool. I saw you tweeting about it before the game, and I was like, I was a little skeptical. I didn't think it could work. And then it worked to perfection. So kudos to the Garden faithful because that was awesome.
It was awesome. Awesome. All right. On to the rain and junk hashtag. So let's see. Ed Keenan 15. There was a thread. Oh, jeez. He tweeted a meme. So now
I'm going to read all 8 panes of this SpongeBob meme.
Nope. I'm just going to say I just read his Twitter handle. I was going to do it, but... sorry.
I'll retweet it.
Let's retweet it. I'm going to retweet it too and just go find that because it's funny. He tweeted a meme. This is great podcasting. This is one for the
verbal
ages.
Meme. It's a SpongeBob meme, so you know it's hilarious.
It's going to be. I know Al Horford's going to appreciate it. At Sandesh Dylan, does Jason Terry still have that Celtics tattoo of Lucky holding the Larry O'Brien trophy? Awkward. Does he? I think he does.
I mean, I think he's gotten it touched up, so it's no longer a Celtics tattoo. He did win a title with the Mavs, so maybe he got it adjusted to that. But I'm sure.
Hat on it?
Sure, but didn't he get that after he won the Mavs title?
Yeah, no. But after he won the Mavs title, he came to Boston. He put that thing under his arm. I haven't seen what he did with it.
My brother texted me and said, if you polled me before this series that when Jason Terry retired, I would have said 5 years ago. And I said, yep, there's no reason for him to be getting minutes in this game.
Nope.
But I bet
and there's no reason
tattoo.
For him to be more effective than some of the other guys. There's no reason for him to even be an option. That's worse. It's not that he shouldn't even be playing. It's what's worse is that he's playing and he deserves to be playing more than some of the other guys who are playing. That's worse.
I would have to agree.
For Milwaukee, anyway.
For basketball
for
in
us.
General. Yeah.
I'll take it. Let's see. At RG3 Stick, Kevin McHale calling Greg Monroe Moose Monroe repeatedly on TNT is awesome. Yes, it is. He also called Tommy Heinsohn Hawk Heinsohn, which I'd never heard before.
I like it, though.
I like that. Absolutely. Let's see. What else do we have here? At Touche Bagouche, I need more Jalen dunking on Zeller. That is all. I'm happy to do that. I'm happy to request that through the universe. And at Betsy May Patel, Tito showing up in a Larry Bird T-shirt is good breakfast. That was.
Can we talk about that T-shirt? Because that T-shirt is like of Larry Bird throwing down a tomahawk jam.
Yeah.
And Larry Bird has never thrown down a tomahawk jam in his life. The position that Larry Bird is in on that T-shirt has never once happened. And that makes that T-shirt 10 times better.
Yeah, absolutely. No, the whole outfit is spectacular. To the rainbow striping down the side of the pants, the shirt with the obviously way too athletic. I mean, this is contest quality dunk out of Larry Bird, which you're right. not exactly what he's known for, but I'll take it. I mean, that's awesome. But yeah, that was a spectacular. At Ball and Opinions, need some clarification. What's the dude on Marcus Morris's chain? I don't know. Do you know?
I can't say that I do, and I don't recall exactly what it is. So
he's got a chain, and I've never seen. I know it's a big, like, round pendant. I don't know what's on that.
Who knows? But maybe I'll do some research, and we'll find out next time on
next time you're in the locker room. Just kind of like walk up to him and look at it.
He'd probably smack me.
Report back to him. Be like, hey, this is a nice chain. I like this. Who's on this?
There you go.
All right. Let's see. That's it. Let's just get to the junk drawer before we wrap this up.
All right. We had some great Brad comedy in the pregame where he said he was asked about Gordon Hayward doing some rehab in Indiana. And he said, Gordon's going to be back. We're rushing him back. He's going to be back for game 3 on Friday. And it was gold. This guy is coming with the jokes, man. He seems like he's doing a lot more bits, a lot more goofs, and I'm all for it. Just the more comfortable he gets revealing his true personality, which I think is a hilarious person and just a genius individual. Of course he's got a good sense of humor. He just hasn't let us show it yet because we haven't earned it, but he's slowly letting it out, and it's fantastic.
I want to point out that I said this at the beginning of last season.
That you did. I absolutely did.
I said it at the beginning of last season on this podcast. I'm too lazy to go back and find it, but I said that I felt like Brad Stevens was loosening up and he was on his way slowly but surely down like sarcastic popdom. And he's there. He's not. He's slowly inching his way.
He's funnier. He's cheerier than Pop. He's funnier than Pop. Pop's just like turned into a curmudgeon talking about Trump and stuff like that. But Stevens is coming fresh with the jokes. Stevens got a fresh 5 every new week. Like he's a Tory stand-up comic.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for Brad Stevens like in 2 years when he's just completely throwing caution to the wind and is actively not even responding with the jokes, like provoking people with jokes. Like
I'm excited for his improv career. I think he's just
He's really like a season and a half away from like snapping on reporters on camera in scrums before they even say a thing.
Oh, I hope he makes fun of Jay King. Maybe he just picks on Jay King and that'll become his new person.
At some point, he's going to unprovoked be like, so still going with that hairstyle, huh, Jay? Like at the podium during a finals game, he's going to be, hi, I'm Jay King from The Athletic. And he's going to be like, he's going to drop a joke about the hair unprovoked and we're all going to lose our shit.
Oh, Jay really showed up in a hoodie today for the finals. Yeah. That was nice of you.
Got really dressed up today, huh, Jay?
That's going to be fantastic. More junk drawer. The winner of the marathon, I don't know her full name, but Dez. She was there and got a huge ovation during like the first quarter and was like whooping up the crowd and like asking them to get louder. And I was like, there's probably not much like confidence and swag. Like a moment you have more than like after you won the marathon, like you got to feel like you just dominated every single person. And so it was just really cool to see someone with like that much confidence. Normally, if you get like ovation for you at center court, you do a nice, polite, like royal wave. She was like really getting the crowd, putting her hand to her ear. It was fantastic. I just love to see people with confidence. It's fantastic.
Dez Linden pulling the Hulk Hogan like hand to the ear, waiting for like, oh, I don't hear you. And it worked.
I think we touched on most of the other things. It was like Morris getting in some extracurricular nonsense. I remember he pushed Giannis earlier. We mentioned Giannis being shook at the free throw line. Sugar Shane's shot, Yabu's crazy thing. That's pretty much it for the junk drawer. I have one like very controversial take that I'm not even sure I want to put out there, but I feel like I have to.
Well, you've already set it up, so
I'm not a Red Panda fan. I've seen it before. I've seen Red Panda. You see Red Panda once, you've seen Red Panda 1,000 times. She's gonna flip 5 bowls on her head. I mean, it's a gimme at this point. She struggled tonight, and there wasn't even drama. I mean, flip something else. Even Gallagher started smashing other things than watermelons. Like, there has to be something more. It doesn't get me going anymore. Everyone's very excited for Red Panda, but it's the same song. It's the same exact act. I think she needs to freshen things up. She had an opportunity when someone stole her unicycle to maybe change the game. Maybe get a BMX bike in there. I don't know. Add a couple wheels. Maybe do it on a tricycle. I'm just saying that you see Red Panda once. You've seen her a bunch of times. Give me like some small children competing at sports or Lil Funk. I'm just not a big Red Panda guy. And I know that's sacrilegious to say because everyone on NBA Twitter loves Red Panda, but I had to say it. She doesn't do it for me.
I won't slander Red Panda.
But you're not disagreeing, which I think is important.
What I will say is I feel like she is past her prime. I think she's messing up a lot more, and you know, it is what it is. I get what you're saying. It's still impressive that she does
it's
that.
It's incredibly impressive. But you know what? I'm a millennial, man. Needs constant entertainment. I need new things. I've seen a lady on a unicycle flip 5 bowls on top of her head many times. And so if this is the playoffs, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. Maybe this is a me problem and not a Red Panda problem. But I had to say it. It was, I felt something, so I said something. That's the rules.
All right. Well, we're going to leave it at that. We'll let the people decide. You can tweet Sam at Jam Packard. At Jam Packard for your hot Red Panda takes, or to agree with him. Who knows? Of course, I'm at Reds Army _ John. You can find a lot of our stuff at LockedOnCeltics.com, the podcast, whatever. Find my stuff on RedsArmy.com, Boston.com. Subscribe to the show if you're not a subscriber or if you're a Bucks fan and you're here just to kind of listen to the other side. Go ahead and subscribe. And, you know, hopefully we're not too hard on you guys. And if you are a subscriber, go ahead and give us that 5-star rating. Give us that good review. And that really helps us out. Share the podcast. Spread the word. Tell all of your friends. Tell everybody that you meet, especially at playoff time, that they should be listening to us, the Locked On Celtics podcast. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network.